your sports betting game with VSiN's exclusive betting splits. Stay ahead with real-time market trends and track bet percentages on any matchup, then uncover the edge by comparing them to the amount of bets placed to find out where the sharp money is headed. Upgrade to VSiN Pro to access betting splits, live odds, line moves, power ratings, and in-depth game analysis. Go to vsin.com/subscribe to join VSiN, the sports betting network.
Check out the VSiN store for the latest and greatest in sports betting fashion. We have more than 40 shirt designs, including our most popular one, Cash and Tickets is what it's all about. You'll find VSiN shirts and hats for any occasion, and they're all made to order, so you can find the right design, color, and size perfect just for you. You'll find VSiN hats and even VSiN coffee mugs all in our online store. Just go to vsin.com/store and order now. That's vsin.com/store.
Responsible sports betting starts with a game plan. That means stick to a budget. Keep it social by playing with friends. Learn the game and know the odds. Play with trusted legal operators. And if you need help, reach out. If you're getting in on the action, visit haveagameplan.org to learn more.
This is VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back for a second hour of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy Bonatoni. Been a fun couple of days hanging out with the former NFL GM, Michael Lombardi. And we have Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast coming up in a half hour. Harry's got a bunch of college football plays all ready to go, which is not a surprise for anybody who knows Harry. So excited for that, Michael. We'll finish your NFC playoff predictions. Also talk some wild card teams you think get in, both AFC and NFC here at the end of the show. But we'll start the second hour. We got some headlines. Actually, this was one we didn't get to yesterday that ties in to one of our favorite segments on the show, True or False, and it is in relation to the Dallas Cowboys. They restructured the contract of the right guard, Zach Martin, had threatened a lengthy holdout. That is now over, so he'll earn a little over $18 million each of the final 2 years of his contract. That, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Still waiting to see, once, as you've talked about, Michael, once these get filed, we know the exact actual numbers. But it leads me into this potential for the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, which is a true or false. With Martin now back, the Cowboys have the best offensive line in football. Is that true or false in your mind?
I think that's false. I mean, there's a lot of questions. Can Tyron Smith stay healthy, right? I think you got to count on. I mean, that's a concern at left tackle. I think Tyler Smith's a really good player, but I think you got to be careful about, you know, where are they at? You know, Zach Martin's a good player. Terrence Steele's been injured. I don't see that. I mean, Cleveland, for example, to me is a better offensive line. Tomorrow we're going to do the top offensive lineman on the GM shuffle. And, you know, Zach Martin will be in the top five guards, I'm sure. But not it'll be hard for some of those other Cowboys to make in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, Zach, I think the reason why we have this as a true or false, it's like Zach Martin, based on the individual numbers, you could argue is a top two, three, maybe even the best right guard, you know, especially now that, or just guard, I should say, in general, now that Quentin Nelson, when he took a huge step back last year, giving up five sacks for Indianapolis, previously sort of held that mantle as the best guard in football. But yeah, I mean, Cleveland as a whole, like Philadelphia, I look even Detroit, I would look at saying three teams just right off the top of my head. I go, I would take their O-lines any day over what Dallas has.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, a lot of it is, you know, on paper, you look really good. Like, you know, the Jets were spent all this offseason looking at, you know, Dwayne Brown's our left tackle. Well, that's on paper. That's not going to come to fruition, right? He's got to be on the field for him to be really good. So I think that's a hard thing.
And by the way, I teased just the injury piece for Dallas. This is on the other side of the ball, but edge Micah Parsons, he left practice with a leg issue yesterday, did not return, had his left calf heavily wrapped. I mentioned it's the summer of calves for whatever reason in the NFL, Michael. You mentioned your lack of trust just in Dallas in general. We talk about how injuries can always derail a season, but where does your big lack of trust really come down to is what we'll see the picture here in a sec of Micah Parsons at practice yesterday.
On the Cowboys, you mean? Lack of trust on them? I think to me is winning the big game. You know, when they're a dog, when they're an underdog, they seem to have that ability. When they are the favorite and the front runner, can they keep it all together? Can they operate as a three-dimensional team within one dimension, which to me is key. And McCarthy taking over the play calling is a step in that direction to manage the game correctly. So they play less defense, not more defense. I worry also, I think Deuce Vaughn was great week one, you know, and he is electric. But can he be the backup to Pollard? I don't know that yet. Can he stand in there? He's a little guy, but boy, he runs well and he's elusive and does all those things. But I don't know if he can handle that role on a full-time basis. That's what gives me some concern too, because even though Zeke wasn't the same Zeke that we're used to from 3 years ago, he still had 12 touchdowns rushing.
Yeah, and it's, as much as we want to rip on how the running backs have been utilized in the past, you look at where they're at now, I look at the personnel being great across the board for Dallas. Running back room is probably the only one I'd rank outside of the top 10 as far as the rest of the positional categories. It's the in-game adjustments from Mike McCarthy as a head coach that I would also agree with you. It would give me a lot of cause for concern.
And the kicker, last year the kicker kind of caught us by surprise too, right?
That was a big one in that as well. So again, just a recap from Michael talking to NFC East. Eagles were the pick. And as far as best O-line, I think it's fire. Like you could still be really, really high and say top five O-line, but not best offensive line. Not yet.
No, I mean, the Eagles have the best. I mean, in the division, the Eagles have by far the best line.
Even in the NFC East. Let's get to another true or false. We talked Detroit earlier. Again, if you missed it, the report that Amon Ross St. Brown, he left practice during 7-on-7 drills holding his leg. So still waiting to see an update from that, the best skill position player for the Lions. But here's a separate true or false based on the defense. The Lions improved secondary. Will lead Detroit to its first playoff berth since 2016. True or false?
False. I'm going to go false there. I'm not sold that it's really have they improved. They've improved in terms of the names. Are they healthy? Can they play to the higher level? You know, last year they struggled mightily in the back end. There's no question about that. But, you know, Gardner Johnson, you know, we got hurt earlier in camp. Can Cam Sutton really help them play? Mosley's still on PUP, so he's not even there. So you're counting on Cam Sutton. And then, you know, Brian Branch, the kid they drafted in the second round, could be their nickel. A lot of this is going to come down to can they rush? Can Hutchinson, you know, get that pressure that they need and really become a dominant force in there? You know, I think he was improving last year, but they're going to need some help. I thought Alam McNeil was a good pass rusher, a power guy in there. But I'm not sold that this secondary is going to go to the highest level.
Right. Well, it's one of those things. Remember talking about, you know, the Chiefs when they were making their ascent to the AFC. You know, it's one thing to be able to get by with a mediocre defense. And I remember that being the talking point. It's like all Steve Spagnuolo has to do as a DC is just have a mediocre defense, get him to like 15th, 16th statistically, and the Chiefs will be fine. You can't really say that in Detroit's case, because as much as Jared Goff has improved under OC Ben Johnson's system, this is not a Patrick Mahomes-led offense as good as we make out the playmakers to be. So, like, I look at where the numbers were at, 27th against the run, 30th against the pass, 32nd yards per play on defense, 32nd in yards per drive. Even with big adjustments, I mean, what's the realistic ceiling? Like, 18th, 20th for Detroit? And is that really going to be enough to get them into the postseason? That's where I have a hard time getting to on the Detroit side this year.
Yeah, and then I think when you look at it, I mean, look, Goff was great last year of protecting the football. I mean, what did he have? He had after the Dallas game when they went to 1-5, from that point forward, the remaining games where they end up 9-8, right? You know, they only turned the ball over four times, and their defense created some turnovers, but their defense still struggled. I mean, even though when they beat the Jets with really, you know, the Jets weren't very good on offense. The Jets put 337 yards on them on offense. You know, that was a closer game than you think. So I'm not sold that this defense, especially the talent level, is going to be good enough. And we'll see.
I share those exact same concerns. We'll do our NFC South, NFC West divisional predictions from you, Michael, here in a little bit later on in the show. And so I have another true-false that relates to the NFC West. Geno Smith will regress this season despite loads of weapons on offense. True or false in Seattle?
I think false. I think he'll be better. I mean, he, you know, it's the second year in a system. So one of the things I've always believed in is the first year we teach you the system, the second year we develop your skills within the system. And I think he will. I mean, he was deadly accurate last year, Ben. I mean, you know, and that offensive line started two rookies at tackle. And they made a playoff game with that. I think he'll continue to get better. I think he'll continue to improve. I think he'll continue to grow. I think this offense has added more weapons to it. And Jigba as a slot receiver, you know, Charbonnet is another running back. If they keep Kenneth Walker healthy, I mean, this is a really good team that can do a lot of good things.
Sure. Isn't the bigger question, if we're talking regression with Seattle, I mean, isn't it the offensive line that was projected to be horrible last year because they were starting two tackles, rookies at tackle? Charles Cross at left tackle, Abraham Lucas at right tackle played really, really well, but there was a little bit of erosion toward the end of the season. Wouldn't that be the more logical regression? Because if that regression happens, then you'd feel a little bit less comfortable, at least in Smith and his progression in the system.
But I don't think Lucas or Cross missed a snap. And I think as the year, I mean, look, they blocked San Francisco too, right? Remember, that's a close game until he turns the ball over in the third quarter, right? And so I think they'll get better. I really do. I think they now know how to play. They got a slot receiver. They got running backs. You know, the tight end situation with Fant and Disley will be really good. You know, do they have enough depth on the offensive line? They drafted two guys in the fourth and fifth round that certainly can help. I mean, that's got to be the concern, is their offensive line depth. But I think Cross and Lucas will get better.
They were really, really impressive, that's for sure, in year number one. All right, that does it for True False. Let's get to what is on Michael's mind today. And I feel like a lot of people have had the Jets on their mind because they've just been force-fed to us all
summer. I watched a clip of Hard Knocks. And, you know, I'm a big believer in the head coach is the guardian of winning, right? There's only one person in the organization at the NFL level that has winning written specifically in his contract, right? Everybody else has job description. Offensive coordinator, get first downs, score points, convert third. That's what their job. Defense coordinator, stop them, create turnovers. So when the head coach basically turns everything over to the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and doesn't get the program that he wants, he no longer is the guardian of winning. And you can see it in the clip, you know, where he's talking about, I think we should stick a run here, but you guys do what you want to do. You guys... That's not a head coach. That's a manager. That's not a leader. That's a head. Mm-hmm. That's not somebody that is insisting on guarding winning. You know, everybody blames Kyle Shanahan for the Super Bowl loss against the Patriots in 51. If Dan Quinn says to him, look, I want you to run it, it's over. But when you do this, you tend to allow yourself to make mistakes. And I think as the guardian of winning, which is the job of the head coach, you got to inject what you want mostly in the conversation.
Sure. Certainly got a much better insight into how Robert Saleh wants to run things. That's at least the one benefit of something like a Hard Knocks, as much as we could say it's ridiculous how much the Jets have been that public eye team so far in the summer leading into the 2023 season. We will get into the two divisions you've got to give out a winner for, Michael. Excited to get your thoughts. NFC South, NFC West. We'll do that when we return. Then Harry Gagnon joins us from the Against All Odds podcast. That's still to come on this hour in about 20 minutes right here on the Lombardi Line.
Hey guys, this is Matt Brown from VSiN, the sports betting network. If you want some help betting golf, then VSiN has the perfect podcast for you. It's called Long Shots. Each week, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin, and myself give you two episodes breaking down every aspect of that week's tournament to help you as a golf bettor. We analyze the courses, run statistical models, and give our thoughts on all the top players. We also give out our favorite bets for outright winners, matchups, props, finishing positions, and more. Subscribe to VSiN's Long Shots wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Legendary sports bettor Billy Walter sat down with Brent Musburger for an exclusive interview, and the only place to see it is on VSiN. Billy reveals his systems for betting the NFL, shares some unbelievable betting stories, and gives the details on Phil Mickelson's gambling, including trying to bet on an event he was playing in. Check out the interview next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only on VSiN. And the reason why that's next Tuesday is Gambler's Secrets from a Life at Risk is coming out. That is being released on Tuesday, August 22nd. So as we were talking about yesterday, Michael, very fun late summer into fall for books being released for the sports betting community, because the Billy Walters book coming out next week, your book coming out in September. Very, very excited, Michael.
September 5th, yes.
I got it all lined up, yes.
I finally have a copy of it here to put up. So the hardcover, I just finally got the hardcover. I got one hardcover copy. Hopefully I'm getting more today.
Wonderful.
This week to send out.
Your book title again is?
Football Done Right.
Football Done Right.
So it's about the Hall of Fame. It's about the coaching trees. It's about the impact of television. Brett Musburger's impact on gambling as it relates to the popularity of the sport, which is significant. You know, I think there are three people in television that really changed the landscape of the NFL, that it was a combustible event, right? You had Howard Cosell on Monday Night Football, which basically made Monday Night Football a staple in everyone's household. And then there was Brent, along with Jimmy the Greek, who was tremendous in their ability to intertwine what everybody knew was going on, which was betting, mm-hmm. into the games. And they did it in a very kind of covert way, but it led people to have ideas. And then the great John Madden, of course, who really impacted. But I think those three things, you know, when Brent was doing when he was doing the NFL Today, you know, there was no ticker tape going down the bottom of the scoreboard. Everybody waited for him at halftime to read the scores, right? There was only one game on in your local area. If you got lucky, you got a doubleheader at 4 o'clock. So it was hard, and it was interesting. One of the things I write about in the book was the Macy's hotline in the early 60s decided to put a Santa Claus hotline in. So kids all over the area could call Santa and tell them what they want. Well, they broke the New York system phone system. They just shut it down with so many calls. It got overloaded. Well, somebody bought that and made a sports phone out of it. So when I was younger, you literally could call this number because that's the only way you were getting scores. You had no idea what was happening on those other fields. You had no idea. And a lot of the people that the Brents create curiosity towards the gambling created this industry for the sports phone. People wanted it so badly.
It is inconceivable for me to even process that in my mind, how that used to work.
I know it is. I know it is.
And that's why I can't wait to read the book. Yeah, I know. No doubt.
You know, I did Rich Gannon's show yesterday on Sirius NFL Radio, and he grew up here in the Philadelphia area, and he shared the same story that I share in the book, where you couldn't wait for Cosell to read those halftime highlights because they were the only clips you got. Other than the games you saw, they were the only clips you got. Like, when I was a kid, I was wondering, would the Redskins wear their dark jerseys or their white jerseys, you know?
Yeah.
And I had no idea if they did or not, until I was praying that they were one of the five teams that Cosell would pick to show the highlights.
Football Done Right. It's all in there. Excited for that to come out here next month. All right, so we have two divisions left for the NFC that we're talking about, your postseason predictions here, which teams will come out of the division. Let's go South. Saints plus 120, Falcons plus 215, Panthers 4-1, Bucks bringing up the rear at 8-1. We also mentioned that big season-ending injury to Russell Gage that just broke earlier today, wide receiver for the Bucks. I wasn't expecting them to be really a factor anyway in this division, Michael, but given that this is viewed to be very, very wide open, where would you look on the odds board?
I went to the Panthers. I thought at plus 350 it was a good number. I liked them better defensively than I did the Falcons. I wasn't sure the Saints could get it all together, so I wanted a better number than plus 130. I went with the Panthers, and I feel like after week one, I'm having hesitations and concerns about that pick because how badly they look. And we know that Frank Wright is 0-4-1 in opening games as a head coach, that he doesn't get his team ready to play. But the Panther team, Ben, is talented. They should be better in the offensive line, which was one of their strengths last year, was their ability to run block, right? They ran the ball on everybody. And their receiving corps, good, not great. And I thought Bryce Young can make a difference. And I thought he looked good for what little he had in terms of protection and his ability to show poise in that pocket. He got hit. Even when he threw the ball, he got hit. So I went with the Panthers. I'm a little hesitant on that today because when you watch the Saints play against the Chiefs and you watch the Panthers play, you say, well, Lombardi, you got to be an idiot. One team looked good. The other team looked like crap. I know it's early. I'll stand by the Panthers.
It is 1 week of preseason as well, as much as we want to dive in and react to all that. I'd rate Carolina as a second choice over Atlanta. I only have the gap between the Saints and Panthers, though, about a point and a half to start the year. I definitely feel like it's a lot closer, at least between the top of the Saints and the rest, if you look at Carolina, than what people are making it out to be. And the one thing I think that really goes in the favor of Carolina this year, think about the strength of the team if you're looking defensively and how good they have been stopping the run. It's a group that I look at a front seven that's a top half unit in the league. They were 13th in rushing EPA per play last year, 12th in overall yards per drive allowed. And think about the rest of the division. Saints, Falcons, Buccaneers, especially now that the Bucs have lost a key wide receiver. You have to think, especially with the Saints and Falcons, those are going to be two teams that run a West Coast sort of a slash run heavy approach. And that does play really well, at least if you're talking about Carolina defensively, Michael, and how they'll be trying to counteract what they're going to see amidst their division rivals.
Yeah, no question. I think it's yet to be. Look, we know it's early, right? We know it's early, and you can't rush to judgment off of one preseason game. So I'm going to stick with what I have. But I kept asking myself, how did Frank Reich get this job again? I mean, because based on what I saw and based on what he did in Indianapolis last year, this looked kind of similar.
Yeah, it was not the greatest of debuts. We'll put it that way for Carolina. I mentioned how they do play the Giants Friday night game, a part of three games that will kick off before we get to Saturday in NFL preseason week two, Giants and the Panthers. Giants a three-point favorite there. Okay, to the NFC West, our final division to break down, 49ers. Only the Chiefs are more heavily favored to win a specific division than the San Francisco 49ers in 2023. Niners minus 160 right now. Seahawks come in second choice at plus 195. It's viewed similar to the NFC East to be a two-team race in the West with the Rams 10-1, Cardinals long shots at 25-1. So you don't believe there will be a drop-off for Geno Smith at quarterback in his second year in the system after getting the contract extension. Is it enough, though, to overcome where San Francisco is at from a personnel perspective outside of some of the question marks at quarterback that the Niners have?
I think this is really closer than you might think it is, right? I think Seattle has had a really good offseason. I think Tremont Jones will help them tremendously, right? And I think returning Bobby Wagner. Now, today they're going to bring Jordan Brooks off of PUP, which I think certainly will help them. And they had a really good draft with Witherspoon, the corner, to go along with Michael Jackson and all the other players. You know, Woolen that played at corner for him last year. So this is really a good team. You know, it's a good team. And I almost went there with them, but I just kind of fell for the continuity, the skill players of San Francisco, and went there. But this was a harder decision that I'm going to kind of keep going through in my head because I think Seattle's a really good team. And yeah. I think they've improved. And I think they're going to be better defensively. They were not good defensively last year. And their ability to play man-to-man more in the secondary with Woolen and Witherspoon and Michael Jackson, I think it gives them a chance.
I definitely feel like I'm in that category of believing in what the Seahawks have done personnel-wise to make improvements, but at the same time, San Francisco is the rightful favorite, should be minus money, and is ultimately going to win the division. Where do you stand on the defensive line of Seattle, where you talk about the improvements they've made secondary-wise? And, you know, Chen and Nwosu had a really good season as an edge rusher last year, but I still look at that D-line as being somewhat of a weak link, and we saw that get exposed multiple times against the 49ers in that elite run game they have on offense.
Well, I mean, they finished 22nd in yards per attempt allowed against them. They finished, 30th in yards allowed, right? And, and people, could run the ball. They were 27th in touchdowns allowed in the run game. And let's face it, with all those numbers, you say, well, maybe they play great red zone. No. They were 25th in points allowed defensively. And their red zone defense was 28th, fourth. And their third down defense was 27th. So all these numbers I'm citing to you really show their defense wasn't good enough last year. And you could see why they added Draymond Jones and they drafted Witherspoon and they need Brooks back. And that's why they signed Bobby Wagner back. I think those additions can help because there's only one way to go. I mean, they make the playoffs last year, Ben, and I just read you some horrific defensive numbers. Remember, the Panthers went into this misconception that Seattle's a good home team is kind of alluring. It's not really the case, right? I mean, the Rams, I know we got to go to break, but the Panthers go in there and win a game. The Raiders go up there and win a game, you know, so you can win games there when most people think you can't.
49ers did on a short week Thursday night in a game everybody thought the Seahawks would trip them up. That was another example as well. We'll continue with our wild card teams later on, but Harry Gagnon joins the show next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts are busy evaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is due out later this month and will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, and football contest strategies. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and reserve your copy of the guide or take advantage of our football season special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. I've really missed this guy. Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast joins us right now, Michael, here on the Lombardi Line. He's back from his European tour. I'm glad to see that Harry has his voice back for one and is ready to go. We've got a bunch of plays, college football wise, coming up. Great to have you back, Harry.
Awesome, guys. What's happening? How's everything?
We're Michael just was at the Lionel Richie last night. He's in a great mood. I get to go to San Diego, a little fun in the sun this weekend. So, you know, it's all good over here,
nice,
man.
Guys, nice.
Yeah, we can't complain. We needed
Michael hits Lionel Richie. Then on Friday, he's got Springsteen. He's doing it right.
Yeah.
Nice, yeah, Michael. No question.
No question.
No question.
Excellent.
We just need Harry back in Vegas for another Against All Odds, a little meet and greet special because we had a great time last year during the college football playoff. And speaking of college football, Harry, all right, let's get into it. You are locked and loaded, ready to go for the upcoming season starts. I mean, we're looking at about 10 days until we get Navy and Notre Dame across the pond in Ireland here. So you've got multiple plays in the Big Ten, SEC, ACC. Let's start Big Ten where – the view is this is Michigan, Ohio State, two teams that are really, really strong coming into the season. Michigan, about $1.75 to win the conference. Basically, same number as Ohio State, each at about a 10.5 win total, with the juice varying depending on where you shop. Where is your look this year, Harry, based on Ohio State and Michigan atop the Big Ten?
You know what, guys? I'm leaning towards Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. I love them over 10.5 wins, by the way. And I also love them for the conference as well. Have a very cake schedule in the very first part of the year where they have play East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, Rutgers. But more than that, just they're more solid, more depth are all across the board. J.J. McCarthy returns. He's 18-1 to win the Heisman. Solid quarterback. Had a great season last year. Expect more from him this year. And they got Blake Corum. Needs to stay healthy. I know he got banged up last year, but Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards will still be back in the Wolverines' backfield. They combined for 25 rushing touchdowns last season. So I really do like Michigan here. I'm not so sold on Coach Day's team here with C.J. Stroud being gone. I'm not sure if Kyle McCord is the answer in Columbus. Michigan looking for a three-peat here, and I think they get it, guys.
Yeah, well, you know, Harry, I had the privilege of speaking to the Michigan team last week, and I could tell you, you know, I watched them walk through, but I was in a team meeting, I spoke to the team, and you could feel the confidence, you could feel the camaraderie. I mean, they know they're a good team, and what was most impressive to me about this Michigan team is they have a lot of upperclassmen, they have a lot of fourth, fifth, and sixth-year players on the team. And they revamped their offensive line, and which will be even stronger than it's been. So I like them, and I think J.J. McCarthy fits what they want to do. Corum, to me, is like trying to tackle a Coke machine. He might be short, but it's hard to get his arms around him. And so, look, the one thing about Michigan, they wear you down. I mean, go back to the Rutgers game last year, right? I think it's 17-14 at the half, and what that game ended up, they killed him. Right, Michigan's philosophy is we're going to punch, 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 and eventually we're going to wear you down.
Yeah, I agree with you, Michael. And just more than anything, the defense is solid and stacked, no doubt about it. But I just don't know how this offense is going to be stopped. I think every game they're going to put up 35 points. I just love this offense. I don't know where they have any faults.
at plus, and you can find plus 180 right now, BetMGM. Both Michigan and Ohio State co-favorites in the Big Ten. My favorite win total in the Big Ten, I bet Michigan State under 5.5, Harry. There's some teams further down that have really, really tough schedules this season when you look at where the Big Ten is at. And you know, that Michigan State number's got a lot of action to the under. What about Purdue, another team that you're looking at? You're looking to eye here among those mid-tier teams with tough schedules in the Big Ten. I'm seeing a win total of 5 right now.
Yeah, by the way, on against all odds, when we went over these picks earlier this week, I did like Michigan State under as well. I think they're going to be – they're awful defensively. You know, they only had 2 picks all season last year? 2 picks all season. I know Mel Tucker got his contract a couple years ago, but just not providing the spark that they need. This team has been down for a couple years in a row. But, guys, my best play in the Big Ten in terms of under wins is Purdue under 5 wins at minus 130. Now, I know they had 8 wins last year, but 6 of those 8 were fairly close games, 10 points or less. The Boilermakers lost a lot from last season. Michael, you know Aiden O'Connell, quarterback, 3,500 yards, is a Raider now. Their best wide receiver, Charlie Jones, is Cincinnati. Payne Durham, the best tight end, is in Tampa Bay. They combined for 1,900 yards and 20 touchdowns last year. Their leading linebacker transferred over to USC. And schedule-wise, even though they're in the Western Division of the Big Ten, they had a terrible draw this year. They get Michigan and Ohio State, Purdue, under 5 wins.
Yeah, I, when you lose a guy like Jeff Brohm when you're Purdue, who's a really good offensive coach, and we've seen what he was able to do with Aiden O'Connell. I mean, O'Connell looked really good in his first start as a Raider in his pro career. So I think that's got an impact too, because it's a challenge and Purdue's going to need to rebuild this thing and it's going to take some time. I like that underplay too.
As we continue with Harry Gagnon, again, give him a follow at AAO Harry, part of the Against All Odds podcast. Used to work out here in Vegas as a sportsbook supervisor over at the Red Rock. And you've got thoughts as well on the SEC. It's interesting. I get the sense a lot of people are very polarized on Alabama in 2023. A lot of people viewing that the Tide might take a step back, given the lack of certainty at quarterback for Nick Saban as a head coach. Where do you see this season playing out here for the Tide in 2023?
Yeah, you know, I don't love this play, but you have to pick somebody. But I am going to stick with Alabama. I know they have the transfer from Notre Dame, Buckner, and they have a 4-star quarterback in Ty Simpson. But as of right now, it looks like they're going to go with Jalen Milroe for the time being. But I just think maybe, you know, Saban for 2 years now has had to, I think he's had just enough of the Bulldogs and Kirby Smart. I do love some of these players. They have two of the best players defensively in the country. I love the name in cornerback Kool-Aid McKinstry. Led the SEC in breakups last year, and edge rusher Dallas Turner returns as well. I just think that this is a situation where Alabama bounces back. They got a great senior running back, and Jace McClellan, running back, takes over for Jahmyr Gibbs. He had 5.8 yards of carry last year, and he had as many touchdowns as Gibbs did last year. And let's not forget, since 2008, Alabama has been number one at some point during the season. That's 15 years in a row. I think Alabama bounces back here. I think it's going to be between Georgia and Alabama. LSU has a slight shot, but I still think I'm going to lean towards Alabama here, guys.
I think the biggest change to me for Alabama is the fact that Nick Saban changed. I mean, Nick Saban was embarrassed last year. Let's face it, right? He was embarrassed defensively to give up all those points to Tennessee, and bringing Kevin Steele, who was on the staff, but really making the changes, getting rid of Pete Golding, and where he left to go to Ole Miss, I think is going to be the difference. I think Nick Saban wants to fix that defense, and Steele has been around them enough to know how to do it.
Sure.
You can find him 3-1 right now still at some shops, Alabama to win the SEC. Harry, as far as the SEC, ACC, favorite remaining play you've got, whether that's a future win total, because I know you got a bevy in that portfolio over there.
Well, you know, I do love – I like – you know, a lot of people are on Florida State this year, and I am too. I think – Florida State wins the ACC. They won 10 games last year, guys, with Travis at quarterback. They scored 35 or more points in 9 of those 10 wins Florida State did. Jordan Travis is one heck of a Heisman candidate. 31 total touchdowns last year. He returns. Their leading rusher, their leading receiver returned too. I think, you know, Clemson is not indestructible anymore. Clemson lost 3 games last year, and they gave up 30 points or more in all 3 of them. I think it's time for head coach Florida State, Mike Norvell, to turn this. He's turning the corner here in Tallahassee. He knows they can they're catching up on Clemson in the ACC. I really like Florida State for the conference and over 9.5 wins. And also, I like Louisville under 8 wins, too. Look, quarterback Malik Cunningham's in the pros right now. He's just started the last 4 years. They got a lot of rebuilding to do in Louisville. And it's just the defense is very, very soft. I'm going to take Louisville under 8, but I'm taking Florida State over 9.5 in the ACC. And again, I'm taking Florida State to win the conference over Clemson.
Wow. Yeah, everybody seems that seems to be a not I'm gonna say a popular pick, but that seems to be against the grain. Florida State, we're gonna find out right away
week
how
one.
Good they are early in the season.
It's gonna be fun, some a fun game against LSU.
That,
right?
That is the week one game to watch. Yeah, LSU about a 2.5 point favorite, looking for revenge. Remember, Florida State went to the Dome in New Orleans, beat LSU in Louisiana last year to open the season on the blocked extra point. That'll be a great game in Orlando, set for week one. Wrapping up Labor Day weekend. Again, he is Harry Gagnon. Give him a follow at AAO Harry from the Against All Odds podcast. Check them out with the whole degenerate trifecta. Harry, as always, great having you back on the show, man. We missed you.
Thanks, Harry.
Oh, thanks, guys. Mike, enjoy that concert on Friday,
I'll send you some pictures. Don't worry.
There'll be a lot of documentation.
I love it.
A lot of documentation, I'm sure, from that concert. But, you know, love a Springsteen show. We'll recap and wrap up all of the NFL futures picks we have discussed over the last couple days with Michael when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining shows and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. As we're back for the final time, been great to be in here with you, Michael, the last couple of days in for Stormy. Mm-hmm. Enjoying the honeymoon, I know, with the newlywed, Stormy and Chris. I'll be here all week. Michael, we'll be back Saturday and Sunday mornings, bright and early. Excited for that. And a big thanks to Caesar for running the show today. Our producer behind the glass, Nick, JB, Mikhail, Andre, Troy, all here as well, doing a great job at our Circus Sportsbook studio downtown Las Vegas. Steph here as well, of course. She always is. Helping run the show on the Lombardi Line. We have a pro tip for the day. And then we have a little news we do want to get to as far as Baltimore is concerned on the injury front. But the pro tip: focus on underdogs in NFL division betting markets where you believe the division has more chances of variance. And I bring that up, Michael, because we talked about the NFC North earlier, looking at the Packers at 4-1. I like making divisional bets where I have the ability to get off of them if something goes wrong. Where you look at the NFC North, right? You can paint a pretty clear picture towards Detroit's number getting longer as the season goes on. They're a big underdog week one to Kansas City. There's a pretty clear path where Detroit could be 3-1 or greater. Minnesota, Chicago are all going to be teams that I believe you'll be able to get at 3-1 or better at some point in this NFL season, which means, you know, unlike, say, if you bet like a San Francisco or Kansas City to win their respective division, if something goes wrong there and you're laying a big price, it's really hard to get out of or have an alternative way to bet it. Whereas, you know, we can bet division odds every single week in the season, and sometimes we forget that. And that's how I tend to approach the divisional betting, and it can be a good way towards profitability, even if you aren't totally on the right side on a particular team, or you start to see some weaknesses and a drop off as we get later in the season.
No question. I like the strategy, Ben, and I think it makes sense. And, you know, we deal with so many uncertainties in this betting market that, you know, sometimes, you know, collecting more data, letting wisdom come later is certainly a helpful way to make money in this field.
Sure, absolutely. And it's why, you know, the two divisions I've looked to target, NFC North and then AFC North. We talked about that yesterday where, and there's you can draw a path toward Baltimore, Cleveland, even Pittsburgh we view to be much more competitive than the market thinks. And
better.
Those are all longer priced teams. I bring up the AFC North right now, though, just from some news of the day we didn't get to earlier. cornerback for the Ravens, Marlon Humphrey. He is confirmed to have foot surgery today. From Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, they are hoping, the Ravens are, that he's out just about a month or so, but could miss the first couple of games of the season. And a guy who's an all-pro corner, that is a big piece of that Ravens secondary.
Well, I mean, he's an all-pro slot corner. Like, when Marlon Humphrey has to play on the outside corner, he gets exposed. He people go after him. And he's a really, really good nickel corner. But when now that they lose him, I mean, they have cap casualty Arthur Mollett from Pittsburgh. They've got Rakia Sin, who played corner for Vegas last year, wasn't very good. You know, and so where are they going to get cover? Where are they going to cover? If Humphrey can't play in the slot, which really, when they're in their nickel front, he does a great job in that area. But without him, this secondary is going to get exposed. And a lot of this is going to come down on, can they rush the passer? Can they put pressure on the opposing quarterback? And I think that remains to be seen. I think we get this notion that Baltimore's really good on defense. And, yeah, they are at times. But there are times where you can expose that secondary if you can protect. And against Cincinnati's passing game, against Cleveland's skill with their offensive line, and Pittsburgh, I think it's hard for them. I really do. They're going to have to play a little bit outside the box. They're going to have to play more zone. There's no way Yasin and Mollett are going to go in there and play man-to-man and think you're going to win.
Right. A team last year, 22nd on an EPA per play basis against the pass. And you have teams in that division, especially now that Deshaun Watson has a full season, even though we view the Browns as more of a run-heavy team, but Cincinnati can throw on them. They did it last year. We watched that happen. So a lot of things still that will need to click for Baltimore in 2023, and we'll have to do so without Marlon Humphrey, at least for the first couple of weeks. Let's get into the rest of your the overall playoff teams, Mike. We talked your divisional picks over the last 2 days on the show. We're going to get into the wild cards right now. So we talked yesterday going Bills out of the AFC East, Browns NFC North, Tennessee Titans in the AFC South, and then the Chiefs in the AFC West, by the way, at a minus 165 there on Kansas City in the AFC West. So your three wild card teams, Michael, are Bengals, Dolphins, Patriots. Give us the breakdown on those three selections.
Yeah, I mean, I got off the jet train, you know, just because I think it's going to be hard. Here's where I'm concerned about my Bengal pick, because every time you make a pick, you've got to think about why would this not work out. And My thought on them is if they start 5-4 like they have the last 2 years, it's going to be hard for them to catch up with that schedule. It's going to be hard for them to make up ground. And we know this. Somebody from the AFC, there's too many good teams in the AFC. Somebody's going to be left on the outside looking in. And like the Lions and like the Steelers, who couldn't overcome their bad starts last year, the Bengals can't start slowly. My downfall on Miami is if Tua doesn't stay healthy and that offensive line is not very good, which I don't think they are, but they've got to be able to stay healthy. I think they're improved. They'll be much better with Vic Fangio. My downside on New England is Mac Jones. Does he protect the football? Everybody gets caught up with, oh, they got a new coordinator. Everything's going to be fine. With Josh McDaniels, Mac Jones averaged 2.5% interceptions that year. Last year, it was the same number. Exact same number, 2.5. He's got to protect the ball and be better at situational football. And if they do that with this defense, if this defense can play from in front, which I think is so critical, I think they've got a chance to be a good team. You know, and I watched last year's team and their inability to stop teams to convert third downs, their inability to play well in the red zone is what killed them.
And New England, of the playoff teams you have, they would be the longer shot just based on the odds board at 35-1. But Michael, keeping out the New York Jets, who are 9-1 to win the AFC, and the Baltimore Ravens, who are 10-1. As we go to the NFC side, we just talked about this earlier in the show today. Philadelphia, the pick in the NFC East. Green Bay, the longer shot in the NFC North at 4-1. Panthers at plus 350. And then you have the 49ers at minus 165. Who did you end up landing on in a conference that is viewed to be much, much weaker as far as depth goes, Michael, as you get down the board a little bit?
Well, I mean, look, all this minus money on the wild cards. I went Cowboys at minus 230. I went Seattle minus 120. I mean, I couldn't find another team to replace the Lions or replace the Cowboys. I wanted it to be Washington, right? Because I think Washington at 8 wins last year should have made the – you know, they had a chance to win some games, but – I just think there's too much dysfunction within that organization offensively, too much uncertainty. So I couldn't go there. You know, I'm not buying the Minnesota train that they're going to be just as good offensively and defensively. It won't matter. I almost picked them over the Lions, but I went that way. Again, I'm not on the Carolina Panthers. I think if I look at this today, based on week one of the preseason, I should probably have the Saints. I would have picked the Saints over the Lions as a wild card, only because I think the Lions are going to have a hard time going from good to great. I really do. I think it's hard for teams. It's harder for teams to do that. And I don't think Goff can protect the ball like he did last year.
Expectations. When they rise, it's a whole new ball game. And it's just funny how we saw last year. I mean, Dan Campbell's Lions got a ton of buzz in the preseason. Totally fell flat on their face out of the gate. Then had the amazing second half of the season stretch. I just wonder, with another year after failing to meet expectations a season ago, even though, you know, technically we view that as a really successful season because of how it ended in Detroit, does that year of strength and growth from Campbell now having more time and reps as a head coach, does that prove to prosper in 2023? I think it's a nice thought to have, but as we've talked about, Michael, personnel-wise, still a ways to go there for Detroit.
Well, the other thing still you have to talk about, too, is teams preparing in an offseason to get ready for you, right? Like, teams are getting ready for the Giants. They know how the Giants want to play, and the Giants have to play a certain way with Daniel Jones, a quarterback. It's the same thing with the Lions. They want to play a certain way with Jared Goff. And teams get ready for how they handle your offense or defense. They study you in the offseason. You know, that's where Philly will stumble a little bit. Teams have spent a lot of time studying this six-pack offense. Now, can they make it? Can they stop it? That remains to be seen.
Sure. You think about defenses against Jared Goff and the Lions. I got to think we see a lot of hands up at the line of scrimmage looking to just bat down Jared Goff. He had a two-step drop, quick passes this year. Going to be a lot of adjustments. See how the Lions can overcome that in 2023. All right, Michael, I'll see you again on Saturday morning, bright and early, 10 a.m. Eastern. Excited for that. Enjoy the concert. You got a little Springsteen action here. I'll be back with Jonathan Von Tobel tomorrow on the Lombardi Line. Always a pleasure, Michael, being with you.
I can't wait. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Caesar. Thanks,
Steph. Caesar doing a great job as well, helping run the show today here from downtown Las Vegas in our Circus Sportsbook studio. So for Michael Lombardi, whole team here at VSiN, I'm Ben Wilson saying so long. Latest edition of the Lombardi Line in the books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.